Welcome to the Bomb and Gouge podcast. I'm your host, Gary Bissell. This week, we're going to talk about adaptability in coaching and how that relates to toughness, as well as the NBA free agency craziness that's going on this summer. But first, a word from our sponsor. All right, we'd like to welcome everybody in. So this week, it's been a while. It has been a long while. It's probably been 2 months since I've made a new episode. Life got in the way. And, you know, believe it or not, this isn't that easy. It's actually fairly time consuming. So had some other things going on and trying to live my life the best I can out here. And just Bomb and Gouge wasn't on the top of that priority list. But we're back. So this week, you know, I want to start. I wasn't planning on putting this in the episode, but last night I watched a movie that brought up some points for me, and I'd like to start with that because I thought it was really cool. And if you haven't seen the movie, I would suggest you go watch it. It's called Whiplash, and the movie's essentially about a drummer who is in this, you know, it's a made-up school. It's a fictional movie, but he's this elite drummist in this elite school for music. And there's this instructor there who is like Bob Knight on steroids. I don't mean big and strong. I just mean take Bob Knight's personality and magnify it by 20. Just very in your face, very condescending all the time. And, you know, I don't want to spoil the whole movie, but the interesting part about the movie that I watched, and while I was watching it, I didn't like it that much. And especially like the last scene for some reason bothered me a little bit. I don't even know why. And I went to bed right after. I was like, man, this movie got great reviews. I didn't think it was that great. And then I woke up this morning and it was like all I was thinking about. And I started thinking back on it. I was like, man, that was really great there. Now all of a sudden, for some reason, I love the movie after taking, which I think that's a sign of a really good movie as far as the way it's portrayed and written, is when you like it more the more you think about it because there's things you didn't pick up on immediately. And without spoiling too much of the movie for those of you that want to watch it, the idea behind it is this instructor who, like I said, he's Bob Knight times a million, and his methods are, he ends up getting let go, which that's not really spoiling the movie, from the school because his methods are so over the top and, say, not conducive to growth for students all the time. But there's an interesting point that this movie brings up. And I've always believed this to a certain extent, and it talks about it more brings up to me the adaptability you have to have in coaching, but you have to understand the Bob Knights aren't all bad. And we live in a more sensitive world now than ever, and if you yell at a kid, you're viewed as a monster. If you're condescending at all, you're a terrible person, and we have all these mental coaches now and mental health, and everything's geared toward making everybody happy 24/7. And yeah, it's a great thing, but quite frankly, it's made us really soft. And the point the movie brings up that I absolutely believe, your elite of the elite people, the Michael Jordans, you know, the best of any business, I don't care what it is, the best musician in the world, the best basketball player in the world, best golfer in the world, it could be, you know, the best accountant in the world, whatever it is. You probably can't push that person too far because they're so mentally tough and they want to be great and they want to be the best so bad that you almost can't push them over the edge. And I can speak from experience just in my days coaching, our best player that we've ever had in school history, and I was fortunate enough to coach him, Alex Scott, I wouldn't say I was harder on him than I've ever been on any player because I didn't need to be. He was so disciplined and we never had any issues with him whatsoever. You know, he was early to everything, stayed late. He was just that type of person. But I will say for someone who accomplished so much, I didn't compliment him a whole lot. And that wasn't by design. It was not like I had this big elaborate plan of, you know, oh, I'm going to act like he's not as good so that it'll make him want to get better. It was just I knew he didn't need it because he's not soft and he had great mental toughness and he had great inner drive and inner confidence. And every time he won an event or played great, whatever he did, I didn't have to let him know how great he was, because it wasn't going to help him, and he just didn't need that. Like, he just wanted to know how to get better. And I will say that, like I said, I wasn't hard on him necessarily, but I never really complimented him, and we were always just like, he could win a tournament, and I would just bring up the things that he did wrong. And maybe some of you are taking, oh man, you're such a terrible coach, how could you do? Yeah, okay, maybe, whatever. But I can tell you this, he got a lot better in 4 years. And I'm not saying it was because of me. I'm just saying this kid's inner drive was incredible. And I just knew he didn't need me to tell him he was great. He needed to know how to get better. That's all he cared about. And he was so singularly focused on how to get better. Where, fortunately or unfortunately, most people aren't like that. Most people, they need you to pat them on the back a good amount and tell them they're great, because they don't have that inner confidence. You know, they don't, it, their confidence is more based on other people's opinions than their own. And that's where Alex Scott's the best I've ever seen. It doesn't matter. He didn't care what anyone else says about him or what they think. He's just worried about how to get better, and he wants to be great, and he's going to do whatever it takes to be great. Where, unfortunately, that's 1% of people. You know, most people were driven by what other people think. If someone says I'm bad, then, well, I guess then I'm bad. I guess I suck at this because someone said it. Well, okay. If that's, you know, you're not going to make it very far with that attitude. And so, but the point to this is, the movie brings up the point in the middle of it where this instructor is essentially saying, like, I'm trying to push people beyond what they think they're capable of, which is great. And I do agree with that. Like, I think that's where that coaching style helps. But so few people can handle that, that you'll break a lot of people along the way, which isn't all bad, because then, okay, at least now I know this person was never going to be elite. I mean, if I can break them, then they were never going to make it. But you can disrupt a lot of people from being good. You know, you can take someone, maybe they weren't going to be great, but they could have been good. And you may have pushed them past a point now where they're not going to be. And I've probably done that too. You know, I've seen people in our program lose confidence. Not a lot, thankfully, but lose confidence while they've been here. And, you know, maybe we could have handled that better. I don't know. But I don't think there's any question that the elite of the elite don't need it. Like, they don't need you to pat them on the back, and they just want to know how to get better. And it's just because their mindset's so different. You know, their mindset is, like I said, singularly focused on how do I get better, not, you know, oh, I need these good feelings and I need to feel good about myself. Like, no, just tell me how to get better. That's all I care about. But that's where I think the great coaches have that adaptability. They know who their elite players are, and they know who their, let's call them role players, like good players. You know, they help the team, but they're not the star of the team. And they know to coach them a little differently. Like, those are the people that need the confidence because they're not the star. Hey, you do have value. Here's your role. Here's what we need you to do. And I think you can be better than you are right now. And here's how you get there. We're generally the elite. They just want to be coached hard. You know, and that is one, I think, sign of great. Most great athletes want to be coached hard. They don't want things sugar. And I don't mean screamed at. I think when we hear coached hard, that's what our mind goes to. Like, yeah, I want someone screaming in my face all the time. No, it's not necessarily what it means. It just means they want the truth. They don't want BS. They don't want to be told they're great when they're not. You know, they don't want to be told they're really good when they're average. They want to know, what are my weaknesses? How do I improve them? It's much more black and white with the elite players. Where you're average to good players, it's not as black and white. They kind of need the confidence, and they need everything you can give them. And then you somehow you got to blend that in too. But one thing that I think is interesting from a strategy perspective as a college coach versus a high school coach, and this is where I think high school coaches are ultra impressive. I've never coached at the high school level. I would think it's very difficult because you don't get to choose your players. So you have to be a great coach in high school. You have to be very adaptable because you don't get to choose your players. So you're going to have all sorts of different types of personalities, and different things are going to drive different people. So you better be really good at being able to coach one person very differently than the next, because the same prescription doesn't work for everybody. Where in college, you do need that, because your odds of, let's say you got a team of, I don't care what sport you coach, let's just say you got a team of 30 people, maybe you're a soccer coach or softball, I don't care. But you're not going to get 30 people that are all the same. No one's that good at recruiting. Where you're going to get 30 people whose mental makeup all matches exactly how you coach. But you're going to get a lot more of them than you would at the high school level. And so that's where college is kind of an interesting deal, because you're trying to recruit people who fit your mold and, you know, your coaching style a little bit. But you're just not going to nail all of them. And so I don't think it's okay to just say this player wasn't a good fit for our program. I think that's a BS cop-out. You got to find a way to get the best out of everybody, the best that you can. No one's perfect. There's not a coach in the world that every player that stepped in their program got better or got at least reached expectations, let's call it. At the end of the day, no matter what you do, how good of a coach you are, you're going to have players that reach expectations or surpass them, and you're going to have a lot that don't. And that's just the way it goes, and a lot of that comes back to the hardest thing to figure out in recruiting, at least I think. And maybe some other coaches can shoot me an email or text on a better way to do this, because I haven't figured it out yet. But the hardest thing, I think, is to measure a person's internal drive when in the recruiting process. Because of the rules, you don't get to spend a ton of time with kids in the recruiting process. I mean, you can go watch them all you want, but you just don't get to spend all that much time with them, especially one-on-one in your sport. You almost get no time like that. And all these kids now, the internet's been a beautiful thing, and you know, the world being so connected, that they're all trained so well on what to say. Like, I'm rarely ever not impressed by a kid when they come on a visit or when I have a conversation with them. Like, they're all coached and trained so well on saying the right things. But then what you find invariably, a lot of them when they show up to campus are very different than who they portrayed themselves at in the recruiting process. You know, every single person says they're such a hard worker. I've never heard someone say, yeah, no, I'm a moderately hard worker. And then they get to campus and it's just not their priority. You know, other things get in the way. I'd rather do this. I'd rather do this. And some of that is college's fault, because college is really fun. And there's a lot of other things to do, but the really internally driven, it's just hard to really make that determination. Everybody seems internally driven until they step on campus and you find out only a very small percentage of them are. So that's my spiel on that. I just thought that was interesting. It was a good movie. It's just thrown me for a loop today, because like I said, when I was watching, I thought it was just kind of okay. And then the more I thought about it this morning, and throughout the day, I was like, man, that was a really, really well done movie. It's just not super exciting or anything throughout it. So let's turn our attention here to NBA free agency. If you listen to the podcast, you know, even though I'm a golf guy, I am just obsessed with, for some reason, just the NBA. I really don't get that into college basketball. And it's funny, as a college coach, I'm really not that into college sports, period. Like, I love Grand Valley sports. Like, I go to basketball games, football games, all that. And a lot of that's because of the relationship you've built with the athletic department and those other coaches. And you feel an emotional tie. And that's why I love Grand Valley sports. But I'm not the guy that, I mean, I love the NCAA basketball tournament in Division I. Absolutely love it. Like, March Madness is the greatest. You know, there's nothing more exciting than that, in my opinion, in sports. Other than, I'd put the Masters up there. The Masters is pretty great. But March Madness is the best. But I don't watch really barely any regular season Division I college basketball games. I don't watch any college football games other than Grand Valley. And I mean none. Like, I just can't. But I watch the NFL. I just like pro sports better than college sports. And I'm in the minority there, I know that. But for me, it's about, I like watching elite talent and things that I have emotional ties to. And other than Grand Valley, I don't have emotional ties to any university. So I just don't care to watch it. if I'm going to watch sports, I want to watch the best of the best. That's why I really like the NFL and the NBA. But I digress. This NBA free agency, because I like the NBA so much, has been fun for me to follow. And, I mean, I'm a Detroit sports fan through and through. I root hard for all the Detroit sports teams, especially the Lions and the Pistons, because football and basketball are my two favorite. But it's obviously trying times right now as a Lions and a Pistons fan. Always has been as a Lions fan, and the last 10 years have been pretty brutal as a Pistons fan. But I still like just the NBA in general, so I'll just watch whatever. Like, I love watching the Warriors because they're so, you know, they play that fast pace and they're so skilled. And then I've always liked LeBron. Just I don't love a lot of the stuff that he does. I think he's a little bit of a whiner, which doesn't sit well with me, especially as a coach. But you got to respect his game and the work that he's put in. Anyway, here's my thoughts on NBA free agency in this upcoming season. I did something a little like this last year in the summer. Once free agency was totally done, kind of gave some predictions. And actually went back and listened to them and did fairly well. I did say I thought the Lakers at best, I think I said they were going to be a sixth seed at best, where people were predicting, you know, are they going to go to the, are they going to dethrone the Warriors? Like, give me a break. I just don't think a lot of people, LeBron is unbelievable. All right, he's debatably the best player of all time. But, and so we looked at it like, well, he carried those Cavs teams so far with nobody, you know, and he took him to the finals. So he'll just easily do it in Los Angeles. And I just think people really underestimated how much deeper the Western Conference is than the Eastern Conference. No disrespect to the Eastern Conference. They have some great teams at the top. But the depth, like in the Western Conference, night in and night out, I mean, the 10th best team in the West is a really good team. And so when you're playing with that young of a core, and the difference is that Cavs team he had, although not very talented, they were a little older. And so they had some experience and guys kind of knew how to manage their way through a season. That Lakers team that LeBron had this year was pretty disastrous in terms of lack of talent and being so young, and then obviously the injury, and we could go on and on. But regardless, when I look at this year and the way free agency is shaken out, and the problem with this episode is every week, if you listen to it that goes by every week, it's going to be more and more outdated because there's still a lot of free agents that need to sign. But the big one was last night with Kawhi, and then obviously Paul George, and that's one I want to talk about first because that's the most interesting to me. Paul George signs this extension with OKC and then gets traded to the Clippers. I thought it was a brilliant move by Oklahoma City. And here's why I think that. I think Oklahoma City was able to realize that they need to build for the future, even though Paul George, Russell Westbrook, cool combo. Paul George is, you know, a top 10 player in the league. Russ is not. A lot of people think he is, but he's definitely not. And you're like, oh, well, those two maybe could do something. I think OKC realized you cannot win an NBA championship with Russell Westbrook. So I did a little digging once upon a time, and I think I went back 30 or 40 years, and no team has won the NBA championship when their star player shot under 45% from the field. So, like, an interesting study on that was Kobe Bryant had years, even in his prime, when he averaged, you know, whatever, 28, 29 a game, where he shot below 45%, but they never won the championship in any of those years. The years that he was a little more efficient, they won. And Russell Westbrook went from being a average to good-ish shooter who took a lot of bad shots to now a horrifically bad shooter who still takes horrifically bad shots. Like, he's got to be the most inefficient player I've ever watched. And it sucks because I love Russell Westbrook. Like, I actually enjoy watching. It's hard to watch, but because he does so much, takes so many shots where you're just like, it almost upsets you. You're not even rooting for the team or have any emotional tie to him, and you still get mad. You're like, God, that was so dumb. But I love the ferocity he plays with. You know, I respect people who play hard all the time because I don't think many of the public, you know, we really understand how difficult it is to bring 100% effort on both sides of the floor that many games. Like, they play 82 games. And it's not like they're just sitting around all summer. You know, and they just come in, like, they're working out all summer and practicing. They're in the gym. And then you got to play 82 games, and that's a lot of basketball. And by the way, 48-minute games. Those are long games. And these guys are, the star players are playing 36 to 40 of those a night. If they're playing a tough opponent, they're maybe they're playing 42, 43. So the fact that Russell does that really impresses me. But dude, he's just so bad. Like, I don't know what's gotten in his head. You know, his free throw shooting went from, he used to be an 80% free throw shooter, now he's like 60 or 62. I mean, I watched a couple of his games this year, and he's taken wide open mid-range pull-ups. That used to be a shot that he did. He's never been a great three-point shooter, but he used to be pretty darn good from that mid-range pull-up. He had so much lift on that mid-range pull-up. And I mean, I was watching shots like right off his hand. It was so far offline, and you just knew it had no chance, which that's a sign of a bad shooter. You know, you talk to any basketball coach, and they'll tell you good shooters miss short and long. They don't miss left and right a whole lot. And Russell Westbrook misses left and right a lot. So something happened there. I don't know if maybe going back to the beginning of the podcast, maybe he's one of those guys, you know, he just doesn't have that inner confidence, I guess. Maybe someone told him he was a bad shooter and needed to change his shot, and it got in his head, and then he tried to change, but maybe wasn't totally committed to the change. I'm speculating, but knowing what I know about sports and the way athletes think, I think that's a realistic possibility that he kind of got half-hearted into a change in his shot. You know, you see that a lot. If you're going to change something, you better be 100% committed to it, because if you get in between, then the mental battle starts where you're questioning everything, and that's my guess on what's happened to him. But regardless, I think OKC realized we're never going to win a championship with Russell Westbrook, because you just can't. You cannot win a championship with somebody that inefficient. So we better just start building for the future. And they've traded for, you know, 3,086 draft picks. Like, they have first-round picks. They're going to have multiple first-round picks for the next 5 or 6 years, I think. I think it goes all the way to, I think it might even like as far as 2026. I didn't read all the details, but I mean, they got first-round picks forever. And what a great deal for Paul George. He gets to go back to L.A. You know, he's played at Fresno State, so he gets to go back to California, where he went to college, and play on a what's going to be probably a really good team. You know, I look at that Clippers team now. Kawhi, that it didn't really surprise me. Like, I did think for a minute there the media had me convinced he was going to sign with the Lakers, but if I would have taken the logic and just thought about thinking about Kawhi, and I don't think he would ever want to play with LeBron. He just doesn't strike me as a guy that would want to play with LeBron. LeBron takes up so much of the spotlight, which I get you could say, well, Kawhi's not a spotlight guy. But I don't think Kawhi, because he's not a spotlight guy, I don't think he wants to be on a team with a guy who's in it all the time, because then that draws more attention to Kawhi, and you get into that whose team is this deal. And I don't think Kawhi's not about the drama. I don't see him wanting that deal. So he goes to Clippers, you know, he gets to go back to LA, which I think everyone knew he always wanted to do, and then getting PG there. I'm sure he made sure they were getting PG before he went there. So I don't think Kawhi wants to be on a non-competitive team. One thing that's scary about this Clippers team, and why I think they'll at least make the Western Conference Finals, obviously you always have to stay in here barring no major injuries, is they're going to be on the perimeter. If they play defense together and they got a good scheme and those guys play, I mean, they could be the best perimeter defensive team ever. They're going to have to find someone in the middle. Right now, I think Zubac would be their starting center if they started right now, which he's not much of a defensive player. But holy cow, I mean, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, in my opinion, are the two best perimeter defenders in the league. So you have the two, and then Patrick Beverley's not far off. Patrick Beverley is a hell of a defender. You know, he's very tenacious, in your face. That's how he's made his living in the NBA. It sure as hell isn't from his offense. So, you know, a team like the Warriors are dismantled now, but a team like that, you know, they could struggle against that Clippers defense. That perimeter defense can be phenomenal. If they're able to find a shot blocker, in free agency. Look out. No one's going to be able to score on them. So I think right now, if I had to place money, I'd put on the Clippers for this year. You know, I do think they need to find a shot blocker and someone a little better in the middle. But, you know, Kawhi's hard to bet against. And the Lakers team looks nice too now. But the Clips, that's a good team. Obviously, the Nets are going to be a year away from being a real championship contender because Kyrie Irving's proved he needs to be second fiddle. He's just not enough of a leader, and he clearly can't handle that being the guy role. So they need KD to come back, and then who knows what's going to happen with that. The Bucks, we'll see. Giannis is scary because he's that guy that he can add anything any offseason. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back and is shooting more threes next year and hitting them at a 33, 34, 35% clip. That wouldn't shock me. And if he does that, he's going to be the MVP by a mile. Because that's the only thing missing from his game right now to make him the best player in the world is he can't really stretch the floor that well. But they did lose Brogdon. That's a bigger loss than I think a lot of people think. And then let's talk Lakers. Got to talk Lakers. They get AD, which will be great. We'll see how well he can stay healthy. And same with LeBron. You know, LeBron, I'm a little scared now because he had his first fairly serious injury and he's getting a little older. You wonder if even with all the time that LeBron invests in his body and money, well, like they say, father time's undefeated. So we might start seeing him unravel a little bit. But they're doing a great job in free agency. So you get AD, and they just put some great pieces around him. Like, Quinn Cook is a really underrated player. Lights out shooter. If you got Quinn Cook coming off the bench, that's a great player to come off the bench. They re-signed Caldwell Pope. Well, kind of not re-signed, but got him back. They had him last year and then traded him, and now he's back. He can be a solid player at times. If he's your eighth man, I think that's a pretty good eighth man. But the huge signing they just made is Danny Green. Danny Green is a perfect fit with LeBron James. You know, you've got to put some 3-and-D players around LeBron, guys that can spread the floor so that when LeBron drives, he's got kickouts. And we all know LeBron is a top 10 defender in the league when he wants to be, and he only wants to be during the playoffs. So during the regular season, you need some good defenders around LeBron because he's going to kind of watch guys blow by him from time to time, because that's another thing that bothers me about him. Like, I love LeBron James, but holy cow, he just puts in about 10% effort on defense in the regular season, the majority of games, and it's just very frustrating. I get he's trying to save his body for the playoffs, but I think you learn this year you got to actually make the playoffs to save your body for the playoffs. So just some food for thought going forward for Mr. James. But Danny Green was a huge signing. JaVale McGee, bringing him back will help because that gives you your shot blocking presence. And you just don't bet against LeBron, really. So I'm hoping, my ultimate hope, is that we see a Clippers-Lakers Western Conference Finals. I think that would be hilarious and really entertaining to watch. Watch two guys or two teams go home and away and trade home and away games at the same arena. But what I'll be more curious to see is the ratio of Laker to Clippers fans at each game. Because we know LA is about the Lakers. But now with Kawhi, like, Kawhi's becoming a pretty popular player. And I think you're going to see some guys convert. Because LeBron's popularity is really up and down. You know, LeBron's a total hate him or love him guy. Some people absolutely love him. Some people absolutely hate him. I'm somewhere actually in between. I definitely love him more than I hate him. But he's got some things that really bother me. But, you know, you get the stands of LeBron. And it's funny because the LeBron fans, they always talk about, like, Kobe stands, right? Like, oh, these Kobe fans that are just relentless and thinking this crazy stuff. But, like, a lot of LeBron fans are like that too. Like, they try and justify everything. Like, you'll show a clip of him being lazy on defense, and they'll try and justify it. Like, oh, well, it's like, you just accept the fact that the guy's not perfect, and he does some things that aren't great sometimes. Like, it's okay. Still, at worst, second-best player of all time. So, but I wouldn't bet against LeBron. Like, especially with AD, we'll see how he fits in. I think they're going to work great together. But here's the key. and this is the main thing I was thinking about when I made this podcast. The Lakers have got to sign DeMarcus Cousins for them to be a true contender, I think. That's my belief. You know, I think right now, I think they could make the Western Conference Finals, potentially. I think they'd have to play really well. But it is LeBron, and you don't necessarily want to bet against LeBron. I think they could win the NBA championship with this current roster, where they're just filling it out with a couple other veterans. But to really be the favorite, I think they need to get DeMarcus Cousins, and DeMarcus Cousins needs to be closer to the DeMarcus Cousins he was for the Kings than he is, you know, what he was been for the Warriors. And I get he's coming off that Achilles injury. Torn Achilles is debatably the hardest injury to recover from. Even for a guy like him, his game's not super built off explosiveness, but he is a big guy, which, you know, that's, I would think your Achilles needs to be 100% for it to really kind of take that amount of force. But man, he was bad with Warriors. Like, I was shocked. I knew he wasn't going to be 100% and looked like DeMarcus Cousins from the Kings, but wow, did I think he would be better than he was for the Warriors. I mean, he's a super average center now. And it was cracking me up because I was telling some of my friends this. I'm like, dude, DeMarcus Cousins is like average. They're like, no, he's not average. He just had a great game. They were talking about that. I don't know if it was the NBA Finals or the Finals. Or maybe it was the Western Conference Finals. They were like, just had that great game where he had like 14 and 11. Like, that's my point. That's how average he's become, where we think 14 and 11 is like a great game for DeMarcus Cousins. We're like, wow, he had four. Like, this dude used to average 28 and 12 or 27 and 12, whatever it was. And then he has 14 and 11 and 6 assists or 7 assists. We're like, what a great game. Well, that's how average he is now. We think that's a great game. But I will say this. If the Lakers find a way to pick him up, which if I was them, I'd be doing everything to pick him up, he'll be better this year. He's going to be one more year removed from that Achilles tear. If he can just be a 15 and he doesn't even have to be necessarily a 15 and 12 guy because he's got AD who averages 13 boards a game. If he can be a 15 and 8 guy, but the key is, I think, the points. You know, I don't think he's got to be a monster on the boards. I think AD and LeBron will take care of that. You know, now he's a great rebounder. He should be a monster on the boards. But I'm just saying, I don't think that part's as important. I think that he needs to score. And if he can get back and get scoring again, and AD and Cousins from the outside looking in seem to like playing together in New Orleans. They did a good job together. I think it could work. And I think it would help. And because the Lakers are going to need a little more scoring, you know. They're going to need someone other than AD and LeBron because that's the league that the NBA is now. Just having two great scorers doesn't get it done. And I don't think DeMarcus has to be 27 a game good. I don't even think he has to be 20 a game good. But he can't have these games he had for the Warriors where he goes 2 for 9 for 7 points. That's just not going to get it done. But if he can consistently get them, you know, he has his hot nights where he gives them 26, but then his bad games, instead of being 2 for 9 with 7 points, they're, you know, he gets you 14, 13, 12. Those are his bad games. You know, he shoots 50% and, you know, he just doesn't get a lot of touches. I think the Lakers are the favorite. That's going to be the key. I think Houston's done. Just seems like too much turmoil. Maybe it'll inspire them. But my opinion is they're done. I don't really see them. I mean, they'll make the playoffs for sure. But I don't see them being really much of a contender. I just think my favorites are the Clippers and the Lakers, which is going to be so hilarious. And don't sleep on the Warriors too much. Klay should be able to come back. Should, I don't know. It's not like I was the doctor sitting there telling him, but, you know, I get what an ACL is, and I also get that he's not Mr. Explosive either. I don't see any reason he shouldn't be back. They said the surgery went well. Don't see any reason he shouldn't be back in January, February, March at the latest, I would think. And I would think Klay's a guy who's going to pick up pretty much where he left off. He'll be fine. So if they can just hang in there and Steph can find one more season of being like he was in that 2015, 2016 or something close to that, you know, he's going to need to average 28 at least. And he's going to need to shoot over 40% from three, 50% from the field, which is asking a lot. He's getting a little older now. Let's not forget that. Steph's going to be 31 or so, 31, 32, I think. I think he's 30 now, so he'll be 31 next year. And then, obviously, getting Russell, D'Angelo Russell from the Nets. That'll help, you know, as long as they fit in well together. But they should still make the playoffs. And then you get Klay back. Okay, let's see what happens. Like, I would not sleep on them totally yet. I think they're going to need to find a big that's going to be able to do something for them, like a Bogut-esque type player. You know, that's who they had back in the day when they were really good. Maybe Damian Jones can be that guy. I doubt it. But it's going to be an interesting season. But if I'm looking at who I think the favorites are, I think it's if the Lakers get Cousins, they immediately become the favorite. Otherwise, I think it's kind of Lakers, Clippers up there. I would throw the Bucks up there because I believe in Giannis. And then I would throw the Warriors in right behind them if Klay comes back healthy in February or so. Not a believer in the Sixers. Just not. Sorry. I just think Ben Simmons is – he's like Russell Westbrook to me. Not – I don't mean that like they're similar players, but he's like this really good bad player. Like, he does some great things, but you just can't be a terrible shooter as a guard in the NBA and really help your team much. You know, I get he's 6'10", so you don't have to view him like a guard, but he's a guard, plain and simple. And it's pretty easy to scheme defensively against a team when you have a player you can literally not guard until he's 8 feet from the basket. That makes it a lot easier. And it sucks because he's got he's really fast and he's a good ball handler. So if you had to guard him on the perimeter, he would be very, very tough to stop. And it's like, I don't know. I'm not there. It's just not hard to make a wide open three. Like, it's just blow. Like, I watched some of their games and people are laying 10 feet off him. He won't even shoot it. Forget, like, you have to at least take him. That's the part I can't figure out with him. Like, are you that mentally weak? Because I know he's working on him. There's no way this dude is going the whole summer without working on shooting threes. And there's no way he's not making them in practice. Like, he has to be. I just don't see how it would be that hard. And people are laying off. He won't even shoot him. People are laying off him 10 feet. It's terrifying to me that he can be that. Either bad, I guess, from three, or I think it's more just he's that scared and mentally soft. Like, he just can't bear the fact of shooting threes, missing them, and the media coming after him more. It's like, dude, I don't think anything's worse than you just sitting there not taking them. I mean, that's – at least if you take them, even if you make one out of five, you're shooting 20% on wide open threes, they have to at least somewhat guard you. Like, they're going to come a little closer, and that'll make it easier for you. Just to not take them is psycho. So, not a believer in the Sixers, not a believer in Ben Simmons, not a believer in Russell Westbrook, even though I love the way he plays. I think we're back to, you know, everyone thinks there's going to be all this parity in the league this year. I'm not so sure. There will be parity, but it's not going to be like eight teams have a chance. Lakers, Clips, Bucks. And I don't, I don't know if many other, Warriors, I don't know if many other teams can get in the mix other than that. Oh, I'm more excited for the following year when KD comes back for the Nets. I really think if KD can come back and from that Achilles, he may not ever be, you know, having a full rupture at 30 years old is pretty brutal. He may not ever be quite as explosive or fast or quick, especially, you know, like side to side. And his first step may not be there. But the great news is he's 7 feet tall with a phenomenal jump shot. And he's got great ball skills. So if you think he's not going to be a top three scorer in the NBA when he comes back, you're nuts. Because even if he's not beating people off the dribble, he's an elite player who I know he does all the right things. Like, this is clearly a guy who is a gym rat. he's just going to get in the gym and he's going to work on his post game. That post fadeaway is going to become Kevin Durant's best friend. He's going to be completely unstoppable, like a la Dirk Nowitzki. Right, and he'll still be much more athletic than Dirk Nowitzki ever was. But it's going to be that style. Like, I think you're going to see him in the post a lot, shooting turnaround fadeaways that are impossible to guard, just like a lot of the greats did when they got a little slower and they had Jordan, Kobe, and those guys weren't 7 feet tall. So that Nets team, oh, man, I am excited for when Kevin Durant comes back the following year from that. That is going to be a lot of fun to watch, especially because they'll have one more offseason to maybe add a few more pieces. So could get wild over there. But that's my deal for this week. Enough rambling on about NBA. So try and make another episode soon. We'll see what happens. Thanks for tuning in.